Hello and welcome to the Enlightened Medicine Show with Dr. Valerie Olmsted, the holographic physician. And you're missing my intro music because I'm at the office instead of at the other usual place. So I apologize for missing that music. And my guest today is Dawn Fazende, who is the editor of Mount Shasta magazine and the facilitator of the WESOC Festival this year. And we tried to get through last week, and we couldn't do that because of phone lines. So you got to hear me just kind of wing it. So this time, we're going to get the down and dirty and the skinny and all that kind of stuff from Dawn herself, who can give us the history and talk a little bit about Joshua and all the various participants. So welcome to the show, Dawn. I'm really happy to have you on.
Well, I'm very glad to be here. This is a great opportunity.
Yeah, it's fun. We need to get more people hooked up with this WESOC celebration.
Oh,
it was awesome.
I agree.
So can you give the listeners a little bit of background on WESOC?
Well, WESOC itself is a very ancient festival. It is the second month in the Hindu calendar. And when Buddha was born, he chose to be born in that month. Some of the Buddhists believe that he was born, became enlightened, and died on the same day.
Wow.
In that month of WESOC. And we celebrate that on the full moon in the first... It's the first full moon in the sun sign of Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it falls in May, sometimes it falls in April. It goes back and forth for us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they work in a lunar calendar in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm. So is this then strictly a Buddhist type of festival?
No, absolutely not. In the 1920s and 30s, Alice Bailey and Annie Besant with the Theosophical Society and Madame Blavatsky, of course, herself, talked about the ancient traditions of the WESOC Festival on the esoteric level. And it's believed that at that time of the year, there are three specific moons. The moons of the Buddha, which is the first one, and then the moon of the Christ, and then following that is the moon of humanities. The only one that's really celebrated so far is the WESOC, the Buddha full moon.
Mm.
But it is said that at that time, Buddha, the Christ, and ascended beings gather at the actual WESOC Valley, which is a physical place in the Himalayas. It looks like to be on the backside of Kailash to me when you look at the pictures of it,
mm-hmm.
where a specific ceremony is performed in the esoteric levels for the benefit of mankind, and is transferred through a blessing into a huge crystal bowl of water, which is passed to the human participants of the ceremony there. And therefore, that blessing is then spread throughout humanity for the year. And that happens every year. And according to the theosophical materials, this has been going on for millennia,
mm-hmm.
well before Buddha was born.
Mm-hmm. And that begs the question then, when do you start feeling the buildup of the WESOC energies?
Well, if you go by the full moon itself, it's usually 2 days before and 2 days after.
Mm-hmm.
For example, this year, 2007, rather, the full moon is on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be felt from Wednesday through Friday, Monday to Wednesday, and then Wednesday to Friday. So that whole week would be a good week for celebrating the event.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're going to do it on the weekend because we still have the Friday as part of that weekend,
mm-hmm.
and we will still be under the influence of the moon. Now, some people say that they feel it sooner. It's hard to say. I live in Mount Shasta. There's always something going on here. So I can never tell, is it WESOC, or is it the beings who come and go from the mountain, or is it the masters coming for their retreats, or what is it? But there's always something going on in Mount Shasta.
That's kind of like Sedona.
Yeah, I would imagine. I haven't spent too much time in Sedona, though.
Yeah, there's always something going on here, too. It's just a different kind of an energy. I found Mount Shasta to be very nurturing and very, very calm and very, I guess, more relaxing, more gentle
sometimes
than Sedona.
It is, yeah.
Sedona's like chaotic, you know.
Well, there's an interesting thing about Mount Shasta. It is very nice to you until you get here.
Ah.
Once you move here, it's known that every bit of, quote, stuff that you may have will show up to be addressed. And I know people who moved here In fact, there was a family from Australia who came here for vacation, loved it so much, went home, sold their house, took their kids out of school, came over here, put their kids in school, and they could only last for 3 weeks.
Wow.
It was just too intense.
That's interesting, because, you know, that's kind of what happens in Sedona, too.
Hmm.
And during the high holy festivals and things, of course, energies really intensify. And, you know, the standard saying here is that the first 2 years of Sedona belong to Sedona, and it's because you have to work on your stuff.
Yeah. The locals have it here. They say at least for the first year, nobody really talks to you too much because you're going to be a different person at the end of the year. They don't know who you are.
Oh, that's too funny.
Well, it's just the nature of these sacred places. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it. I mean, you know, I'm so used to the energy of Sedona that it just didn't, you know, strike me as being nearly as chaotic.
It doesn't do that until you've actually moved here and said, okay, let's get to it. When I had been visiting here for a year and a half. When I first moved here, however, the first 6 weeks that I was here, I could not do anything but sit and stare at the mountain. I would come downstairs, walk across the living room. We had this huge picture window right in front of the mountain. And the voice in my ear would say, sit. And I sat, literally, all day long, in this big barrel chair, stared at that thing. And I could feel it physically reworking my body.
Wow.
Realigning me, retuning me to be in alignment with it. And then when it was over, it was boom, over. You know, 6 weeks. Not many people know to do that. Not many people have the luxury of being able to just sit for 6 weeks.
Yeah. And I imagine if they tend to move there during the WESAC time, it might be even more intense.
I would imagine so.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of all these things. I know energetically what we go through here in Sedona. And I mean, people come into my office looking wild-eyed, you know, at certain times. And we tell them, just breathe, it's okay, you know. Everybody's going through this. You're not alone.
Yeah, there do seem to be periods here when the mountain sort of ratchets everything up a bit.
Interesting.
And people just look at each other, and those of us who are aware will say, oh, it's the mountain. But the locals just go around yelling at each other. They don't know the difference.
Oh, that's too funny. Well, I noticed when I was there, now, you know, for me, it was kind of crazy because I was in the middle of this big study and everything. So for me to take off in the middle of all that was kind of stressful.
Well, I'm glad you did, though.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I was trying to get that across to people when I spoke last week when we couldn't get to you on the phone. And I just feel that it was so powerful, that whole celebration. I mean, here are a lot of people that believe in a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone is spiritual, but from different disciplines, and yet coming together and just really celebrating this in a way that was just so powerful, so profound in its simplicity. And I wonder, can you give us a history of how this festival started in Mount Shasta?
Well, this particular festival started with Dr. Joshua David Stone. He was given guidance from Dwal Kul, he and his first wife, Terry, to do the festival here. And so he called myself and my housemate at the time, Joanna Cherry. We were still good friends, Joanna and I, but we were housemates at that time. He knew Joanna, and through Joanna he met me and asked us what we should do or what he should do and how we could help him to put this thing together. So we gave him all the information we had, and he started it here at the community center. In the first year, he had 395 people.
Wow.
And, you know, he said next year he's going to do it again. And he spent that year giving it to Dwal Kul and investing in advertising and things like that. And he and Terry split up. And the next year we had 1,000 people.
Holy cow.
And it was just bigger and bigger and bigger every year. And it grew and grew and grew for 10 years under his guidance. You know, we had upwards of 2,000 people at one point, but that's the maximum that we can handle here. We don't have a large enough facility.
I was going to say, where do you put 2,000 people?
At the college in Weed. We had to use the Weed Gymnasium, the Weed College Gym. Lots of rented chairs and bleachers. But, you know, they would come, and they'd start at 8 o'clock in the morning, have a break for about 2 hours in the middle of the day, and come back and go till midnight. It was an intensive experience, and that was what it was meant to be. And then Joshua got sick. I don't know the cause of his death. I do know that he had diabetes. And the story that I was given from his assistant was that he woke up one morning and said that he had been told in a dream the night before that his work was complete and that he could leave.
Wow.
And then 3 days later, he fell asleep and didn't wake up.
Mm.
Now,
well, that's the way to go.
Well, yeah.
That's amazing.
The year before that, he had asked me to do WESOC for him.
Mm-hmm.
And when he passed, you know, I had instant knowingness that the reason he had done that was so that I would know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to keep
well, that
it
makes
going.
Sense.
And then I sat down to talk with him on the inner levels, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I got confirmation that that was what he wanted. He wanted it to continue, and he knew that I would do it no matter what. And that's true. So this year we did it, and it wasn't what you would call a money-making event.
Mm-hmm.
This year, it probably will pay for itself next year.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not the most important thing. What was important was all the people who came here and all the good energy that they brought and received. It was such an amazing event. It was the highest WESOC on the energetic level that I've ever attended, and I've been to every single one.
Wow.
It's a different type of energy now. Joshua was a mental, very, very brilliant man, and so
mm-hmm.
a lot of what he did seemed to be very, very much in the head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Mount Shasta tends to make you open the heart when you're here.
Oh, yeah, you could definitely feel the heart energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what I look for anyway.
Well, and I think that's what we got. Now, the teachers that we brought here, Dr. Shaw is an amazing, dynamic healer and teacher. We were just so fortunate that he decided to come and be with us. You know, he was rocking the walls.
Yes, he certainly was. I am the recipient of one of his divine healings.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite interesting. I was talking about it last week on the show. And it was kind of surprising because, you know, Westerners are not so used to Oriental enthusiasm.
Yeah. He's definitely got a lot of that.
He does. He's a pretty high energy guy.
He is.
And
I guess you need to be to sustain the level of energetic work that he does.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it was interesting, though, the difference between sitting in the back of the room, you know, and going through things with a group, and then going in and having a personal session with him,
mm-hmm.
because he was like a little kid,
yeah.
you know. When I sat down, we started talking. It was like two little kids on the playground, you know, totally innocent, and just, you know, innocent and caring and loving and very gentle. And he did not yell silent download at me, which was good because it was kind of cracking me up. But and I noticed with other people, he was slamming his fist down on the table and you know, getting very loud with it. And I thought, I wonder if that's because they have some kind of resistance.
I couldn't tell. I was wondering that myself. I don't know if it's resistance or just his perception of what they need in a particular moment. Some people, you need to give them a big show, and some people, you don't.
Well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Because, you know, people asked me afterwards, well, did he do that with you? And I said, well, no. He was pretty quiet with me, you know.
Yeah.
But I still, you know, I saw things and felt things, and I went, okay, that was pretty interesting. And but I had like three people behind me while I was, you know, going through what had happened with one of his assistants, and
and
it was just kind of interesting to hear the difference and to see the difference, you know, when he's up in front of the audience, and and just an amazing healer, you know. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, he would almost be like an on fire evangelist or something, you know, if he would turn and listen to the Christian world.
Oh, yeah, well, I was told.
With that type of healing energy that he can move. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You were told what?
I was told that he was the Benny Hinn of China.
Hmm.
And I said, does he slap them on the forehead and yell, heal? And, of course, he didn't do that.
No?
But it was kind of similar, and I thought, you know, I know that the spirit of the audience can make things happen too. And, you know, I've been able to feel that myself, you know, if I'm presenting something and, you know, you feel more alive, more connected, more energetic in front of an audience. The bigger the audience, you know, the more energy that you get.
And this audience is usually pretty skilled at giving energy to the teachers when they need it.
Exactly. You know, when you have an audience full of healers and readers,
yeah, people are
kind of given
to this type of work at this level.
So that was a lot of fun. I hope that he'll be back next year,
too. He will, actually. He's already agreed.
Oh, excellent. So, listeners, if you have not had an experience with Dr. Shaw, save up your ducats and get ready. And I do suggest that you come to the WESOC celebration next year and particularly pay attention to Dr. Shaw. It was very interesting, you know, and if you ever want to see miraculous healing in action, that was definitely going on.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really
healed.
Fun.
I got a new kidney. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah, and somebody got, let's see, the new spine, new brain, new heart. And I guess I should say to the listeners, and when we say new heart or whatever, we're not talking about a brand new organ. We're talking about the soul of that particular organ. And, you know, before then, I was not aware that every organ had its own soul. And when I thought about it, I thought, well, that makes sense. You know, microcosm, macrocosm. And then I talked with a friend of mine who's a Cherokee sound healer. And she said, oh, yeah. She said, we teach that in our tradition, that there's a soul within everything in your body. Each little step-down unit has its own little soul. But then you have the oversoul that controls everything. So that was kind of interesting to me, kind of like the, you know, the drop of rain in the ocean thing. So that was great to see him. And I didn't get to see all of the speakers, so maybe if you could talk a little bit about some of the other ones, that would
kind of
help.
Well, the other one we had Jean-Claude Coven, whose book, Going Deeper, is crawling up the charts.
Oh, that is an awesome, awesome book.
He's just an amazing man. He's so centered and so well-intentioned and so generous with his time and his energies. You know, he had founded many, many different businesses and sold them off, and then all of a sudden one day he woke up enlightened. You know, it just happened sort of overnight. And he started writing books about his experiences and how to take your experience with the divine much deeper into your own beingness. And he's just a gracious and generous and giving man. Very, very perceptive. And the audience loves him.
Oh, yeah.
He's not a healer, per se, but he does in a way because of the
psyche. He's a healer of the psyche.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think he reaches really deep into people's emotions and really helps people to connect and to realize, hey, I'm not alone. And all this weird stuff that happens to me, hey, it's real. Here's somebody writing about it. And here's somebody that says, relax, it'll all be fine.
Yeah, and he came from the perspective of no real religious teaching, no real spiritual background, to all of a sudden, oops, God is about me, you know, and then having the ability and the courage to just embrace that 100% without looking back. And it's changed his life, and now he's helping everyone else change their lives.
Oh, absolutely. It kind of brings to mind, you know, all the ancient, you know, traditional sayings and things, and they make everything so very mysterious. And Jean-Claude just basically demystifies it, you know.
It ain't no big thing.
Yeah, it's all about you.
It is what it is. Look at it.
Yeah, exactly. I love the way he wrote his book, and he is such a dear, sweet man, and just awesome. And the audience totally loved him, too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it was that was quite remarkable.
And right behind him, we have Michael Tamara.
I didn't get to see Michael.
Michael Tamara is a very well-known spiritual healer. In fact, he literally is the one that the healers come to for healing. He's got a book, You Are the One, and he now lives in Mount Shasta. He moved up from L.A. I think he's Japanese. But he too has this sort of just with you presence. You know, he's there. He's not above you, not below you. He's just a part of you, and he's willing to pitch in and do anything to help you. And he's jovial, and his talks don't kind of pound anything into your head. He just shares his information. And he makes you laugh, and all of a sudden you realize you're healed.
That's a great way to do it.
He's not showy. Uh-huh. But he's entertaining as a speaker, and he manages to get a lot of healing done. And he's worked with people, especially people like James Van Praagh, who rave about him on his website. He comes with such deep credentials as far as the people who will swear by his work. And yet he himself is just so humble and so pleasant, and he doesn't take any of that into his head.
Mm-hmm.
And his teachings are just superbly simple.
Well, I wish I hadn't missed him. I don't know what I was doing during that time, but I did want to hear him speak. And, well, maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure. Actually, Michael will be here. He's local.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll be here. Let's see, who else did you miss? We had Michael Peter Landrin from The Magical Blend.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us an hour or so about his experiences with Amazonian shamanism.
Michael's
awesome, a very dynamic speaker. He's all over the stage.
Oh, he was funny.
And he tries to get so much out. You can't help but get revved up with him and get all enthused. You know, I want to go there because he has, look at the experiences he had, you know.
Oh, yeah, that was awesome, the way they were just going into the villages and and had all the wonderful pictures of the people that they interacted with and his stories about the guinea pigs and being presented with his own guinea pig.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I'd be going, I'm a vegetarian, thanks.
No, I don't eat those things. I don't eat nothing furry.
Yeah, well, I have had gibnut when I was down in Mexico, you know, through there and into Belize and Guatemala and stuff. I did a shamanic training, and so we were in Belize, and they presented us with gibnut one night.
Mm-hmm.
And gibnuts are giant rodents.
Oh, gosh.
And they look like giant rats. They're about, I guess it was about 2 feet long or so. They have a coat just like a fawn. So it's chocolate brown with little white dots and stripes. And then you see this little rat face.
Well, in New Orleans, they have, or in Louisiana, in the bayous, they have something called nutria, which is nothing but a glorified water rat.
Oh,
it's
mink, yeah.
It's really good eating.
Yeah.
According to the Cajuns.
Yeah. But. Yeah, it's kind of funny, you know, when you look at all these different cultures and things, and we all go, ew, you know, who would want to eat that? But, you know, when you're hungry, you'd eat anything.
You learn.
Yeah, exactly. So that was kind of neat that he was showing, you know, the different lifestyles and talking about the heart of the people. And I really felt like this entire festival was all heart.
Well, that's what I was aiming for.
Well, I think you succeeded quite well.
Good.
Yeah, it was just so wonderful, so beautiful. And I talked to so many people who had really major heart experiences.
Oh, good. And all the feedback we've been getting has been very powerfully in the positive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few people have a few suggestions about this or that, but no real major complaints about anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's so amazing with a festival of this size, you know, and with the expectations people have learned to place around Wesak. Okay. I expected major complaints because, first of all, Joshua wasn't there.
Yeah.
And his influence wasn't there. But instead, everybody was just, I mean, people who've been coming for 12 years are writing me saying, this was the best Wesak yet.
Oh.
And I don't take credit for it. All I did was, you know, rent the space.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody who showed up created it together. Mm-hmm. We all did. And that's just where the people and the crowd and the teachers and the volunteers and the mountain, and that's where everybody was this weekend.
Yeah, it was interesting, the mix of people that showed up.
Well, we had some local teachers, which we don't usually do. Joshua didn't ever really call on the locals.
Mm-hmm.
Gregory Hogue was not a local teacher. He was a teacher of sacred geometry. And he presented a very mental topic, mm-hmm. sacred geometry, in a way that opened your heart. It's very interesting to see.
Yeah, and when he did the demonstration with metaphors,
mm-hmm.
with the light.
Yes.
Everybody in the audience
great?
Was going, ooh,
ah.
That was so cool.
You look at those images, and they're beautiful in and of themselves, but then when you spin them and add the light to them, and it just activates the mind.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole body just gets thrilled by that, because it's like you can see light in action, and this is what light looks like working in your bodies.
Yeah.
And we resonate, you know? That's
I know. Everybody was so excited. It was like a bunch of little kids. And I remember sitting in the back there, and I was like, wow, look at that. I want a bunch of those in my house.
Well,
so,
we
yeah, lots of fun.
I think the rest of the folks were locals. We had Patricia Resch.
Mm-hmm.
She has studied with the Oneness Movement people, Bhagavan and Amma in India.
Mm-hmm.
And she and her group came, and they were doing Diksha, which is basically transmitting energy from the divine for the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
All she did was give a very small explanation of it in the very beginning, and then they all went around and just transmitted the energies. And I tell you, it felt like a cathedral in that room, in that gymnasium,
mm-hmm.
as they were walking around, receiving and giving the energy. You know, it was just amazing to see. And then they did it again the second day, and the people who hadn't come the first time were rushing to get in because they had heard how great it was the day before. They wanted some of that.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, it's hard when you miss it, and then you hear about it. It's like, oh, man,
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to miss that, you know. It's like you don't want to miss a minute.
I know.
Everybody that was there was just so awesome.
Well, and we had Carl Marsak, who was teaching the Enneagram.
Mm-hmm.
He's started the Mount Shasta Enneagram Foundation. But he also has been a global lecturer on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody seems to be interested in systems that can kind of help them sort out who they are,
mm-hmm.
you know, give you a pattern that you can understand. That's why we go to astrology and we go to various other forms of personality descriptions. But there's something about the way the Enneagram works that is unique, and it's different, and it helps people come to realizations about their personality type. So Carl was able to give people some very good information that they related to, and they're very excited. They've been calling him, I've heard, all week long.
Cool.
For more information. So
I didn't stay for too much of that. I had, you know, friends I had to meet and things, but
mm-hmm.
I kind of was in here and there, you know, and I caught a little bit of each lecture, and it was interesting, but I don't know enough about the Enneagram to really get into it.
And
so.
I don't, except they keep teasing me. They said I'm an 8, which probably means I'm bossy and overbearing. You know,
yeah.
Who knows?
I don't care. You know, but you have to be for what you do.
I told them, I said, listen, tell me an 8, I'll play to the 8. Tell me I'm a 6, I'll go play to the 6. I am a sovereign and independent being, and I can be whoever I choose to be in any moment. So.
Yeah, I think that actually, you know, at some point we probably go all the way around the wheel on that.
We probably do.
Because every single one of them was like, yep, been there, done that, yep, been there, done that, yep, been there, done that. And my friend was asking me, well, what are you? And I said, boy, I don't know. But then on one of the lectures he said, well, it's what you came in with.
Hmm.
And I said, oh, if it's what you came in with, then I'm an 8.
Well, the 8 is supposed to be the protector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I was the oldest. I have not only my own siblings, but we lived in a one block, a dead-end street, and I had aunts and uncles and cousins, 16 cousins younger than me.
Wow.
When I grew up. So, yeah, I was the protector. You better believe it.
Yeah, well, me too. I'm the oldest of 3 children.
Hmm.
And, you know, took care of my brother and sister while Mom was sleeping all day because she worked nights.
Hmm.
And Dad worked days. And so I was kind of the built-in babysitter / maid.
You're right.
And,
I went that route too for a while.
Yeah, and yeah, you do step into the role of protector.
Mm-hmm.
And then I find that as a physician, I'm doing the same thing. I did the same thing when I was an RN.
Hmm.
You know, I would step between the patient and the doctor at times, and some of them I threatened to take outside and educate. And they were kind of shocked at that. But, you know, I mean, when someone's life is at stake, you have to step up to the plate, you know?
I remember my friend's dog was being walked by somebody while she was away, and he walked in front of the house with the dog, and the dog came rushing back, and he had a tennis racket in his hand. He swung it at the dog.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know I was inside. And I was out the door, ready to grab him by the throat, when Sahadev, who was with me, grabbed my shirt. He says, no, he's playing. Watch, he's playing with the dog. Don't hit him. Don't kill him.
I know, that protective energy sometimes.
Well, I've known that dog since he was a puppy. Nobody's going to hurt that dog around
me. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I had two dogs that went after one of my cats years ago when I lived out in the north end of Las Vegas. No fences or anything, and these dogs, neighbors' dogs, used to just pack and come after any animals and kill them.
Yeah.
I walked outside my back door one Sunday morning, about 10:30 in the morning, and there's two dogs, one, you know, boxer and a pit bull, had a hold of my favorite cat, and were pulling him apart, and I went after him with my bare hands, and they let go of that cat as they felt my fingers closing in on their necks.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And everybody said, "Are you crazy? They could have ripped you up." I said, "Oh, no, they couldn't." I think that is, you know, that's pretty accurate, that an aide is the protector. And listeners, if you have any other interest in that, please contact Carl Marsak. And what's it called, the Enneagram Institute?
Enneagram Center in Mount Shasta.
Enneagram Center in Mount Shasta. Yeah, very interesting stuff. It might help people to kind of understand why they have the urges that they do and why they've behaved the way that they have.
You can find him through wesoc.us. All the information is still on the website for all of the speakers.
Oh, excellent.
So they can all go to wesoc.us and contact any of the speakers that were at the event.
Oh, that's great. I hope you're going to leave it up for a while, too.
We will, until I get the speakers for next year.
Okay, good.
And I still am not sure that I'll completely remove this year's speakers. It depends on whether it's serving for to be there or not. If it's not serving any purpose, then we'll take it off.
Well, you might just have another section, you know, detailing last year's speakers. The reason I'm saying that is because this show is live right now, but it will be on the archives.
Oh,
and
okay.
So people might get to it, you know, a month from now or 2 months from now,
right,
you know, whenever they have 5 minutes, they
That's
can download and listen.
Now, how did you feel about our musicians? Weren't they great?
Yeah. You know, the music was outstanding.
All locals except for Jen Ambrose, who was fairly local.
Oh, she was amazing.
She just sings for her soul, doesn't she?
Oh, man, and what a voice.
I know. It comes from somewhere else. You know.
Yeah, it was just awesome. My friend said he was walking around. He was, you know, talking with his friends, and he was about to walk out, and he said, "Oh, my gosh." He said, "Her voice stopped me in my tracks."
Uh-huh. I mean, every song she sang, she was getting standing ovations.
Oh, yeah, she was awesome.
Well, she's actually opened for Donovan.
Oh, really?
And some pretty well-known names, but she's so self-effacing and humble that you wouldn't think of her as being a star, you know.
Yeah, she was wonderful.
I heard her once at a festival, at a Sacred Mountain festival where I was chanting with my partner.
Uh-huh.
And it was immensely moving for me. I had been sitting there all day, and finally one person comes up and opens her mouth and the heavens shake. I went, "Oh, I guess, yeah, she's coming to WESOC for sure." Get her.
Oh, definitely. That was so cool. By the way, I loved what you and your partner did.
Bye, David.
It was just so cool. And, I mean, I don't even know what to call it because I hadn't heard anything like that before, but it was just beautiful.
Well, we call it Bhajan. It's chanting the name of God. One of the major gurus in India was asked, "Swami, how in this age of Kali Yuga does an ordinary person find his way through the darkness to the light?" And he said, "Chanting the name of God."
Oh, wow.
And in Hinduism, there are 10,000,008 names for God. So there are an unlimited number of bhajans or songs that can be sung, invoking the different energies of God into the body. Sanskrit is a language of science that is designed to work specifically with certain areas of the chakras of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And when you sing in Sanskrit, you are activating the different petals that are associated with different chakras.
Mm.
So, I don't know. It's something you kind of have to experience, but the first time I experienced it, I just immediately felt it, like electricity going through my body.
Oh,
and
yeah, I was amazed.
I have not been able to stop singing since. So.
Well, you know, here's a suggestion for you. You know, Don and Doug that own this station are amazing guys. And they put music on, and they play it, you know, when the live shows are not on, they're playing the music. You might want to do a CD and send it to them.
I think we might be able to put something together from all the recordings my brother has taken, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it would be so amazing to have, you know, the sounds of the name of God on there. I know I have a tape that's called 1,000 Names of God,
mm-hmm.
and I've played that for years. And but it was not as light and as heart-centered as what you did.
Oh.
And so I really enjoyed what you did because it was more more rhythmic and more, I got to say, heart-centered, really.
Well, that's how I operate. I mean, you can be as intelligent as you want, and I am not a stupid person by any stretch of the imagination, you know, but what it all boils down to for me is how do we live in our heart center?
Yeah.
That is the God center. It is the first step in the chakra system where you're out of the human experience and into the God experience. You know,
yeah.
The lower three chakras are valuable and important, but they're all about being human. And once you're out of those, you're working more closely with your own divinity. And I like living in the heart chakra right now.
Yeah, me too. It's so much more free. It's so much more balanced,
mm-hmm.
which would make sense. It is the balance point. And
well, that's what Kathy Zavada's work is very good for as well. Kathy, the singer.
Mm-hmm.
She is so heart-centered herself.
Oh, yeah,
she
was so cute.
She traveled around for years following Amaji everywhere, singing mm-hmm. Amaji Sat songs. But she's mm-hmm. a singer and a songwriter in her own right.
Mm-hmm.
She's doing a new CD right now. It's going to be phenomenal from what I hear. And she is, she's just an amazing the way she can handle a crowd. I mean, the first time I saw her, we were at a festival at the beach, and it had gotten rather rowdy because the electricity went off, and the guys were doing drumming and blah, 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 blah. And I was sitting way on the other side of the beach, kind of looking at the stage, and I thought, well, I'm just going to go. And then I saw this little white figure kind of come up to this little tiny keyboard, and I said, well, this poor kid, she's going to need somebody to support her, so I'll stay here. That girl walked up to that keyboard. This is, of course, after the electricity came back on, and in three chords she had them wrapped.
Wow.
I mean, and they were just going with her, you know. So I said, this is somebody to watch. She's very good. And then we had Anton.
Oh, yeah, Anton is wonderful.
He does his kind of combination jazz, Tibetan, Hindu, soul, love music. It's so incredible, so unique, his sound.
Yeah.
He was his Om Tara Tara. Every time he sings that song, I just get transported.
Mm. Yeah, I think I've heard him here in Sedona, if I remember correctly.
Oh, he travels around quite a bit. You probably heard Gentle Thunder in Sedona, too.
Sounds familiar, yeah, I think so.
She travels, and she just made a CD with two Grammy-winning artists. She played native flute and dulcimer, hammer dulcimer.
Mm.
She, too. When she goes through the audience with her flute, she stops by people whose energy may need some soothing or some healing,
mm-hmm.
And she's just drawn to it. The flute is drawn to it, and she'll play, you know, like standing behind you or in front of you, and mm-hmm. it can really shift how you are in your body. And
you
quite
know, that's important. Mm-hmm. That's something that the listeners, if they have not experienced sound medicine.
Mm.
They might not quite understand that. When we talk about a shift, we're talking about something you can feel.
Oh, absolutely, you can feel it.
Yeah, and not only do you feel it, but it creates healing in your body.
Yeah, I say it's not a subtle shift.
Yeah.
It's something that you know is happening.
Oh, yeah, you can feel it. I mean, there is no doubt. Sometimes if you go with it and just close your eyes, you'll see patterns and colors, and sometimes your body will talk to you. Very interesting experiences with sound.
Well, and Mystic Pulse, too. I mean, Mystic Pulse has a journey sound.
Mm-hmm.
And everything they do is designed to take you in these cosmic meditations. You know? They have a didgeridoo player who was not able to be here this for WESOC.
Oh, that's too bad. Didgeridoo is pretty interesting.
Yeah, but the beauty of Mystic Pulse is they can function with whoever shows up, and whoever doesn't is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Not many bands that you know can do that.
Yeah.
But the way they play, if you just sit and go with it, I mean, it will definitely move you into some sort of out-of-body experience and into an almost ET experience.
Because
you can feel, you know, the edges of outer space when they're playing. Tom's been doing like guitar work for years and years and years. He sits down and it just merges with him. And it comes straight from him every time. And it's never the same any time. And it's amazing. It's just never the same. It's completely...
That's kind of like Jimi Hendrix, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, not the same volume.
No.
But it's a completely unique experience and different flow every single time he sits down.
Mm.
And completely improv.
I enjoyed the music very, very much.
And how'd you feel about our vendor booths?
The vendor booths were so much fun. You know, I had to go, and I got to tell you, I bought two goddess dresses and a shawl, or actually one of those cape coats, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they were just amazing. The goddess dresses that I bought, I have never seen anything like them. I mean, first of all, they were tie-dye, so you know that's good. For a child of the 60s, you know, even though I was college prep all the way, I still love the tie-dye. And this woman, Josie, had this beautiful selection of tasteful tie-dye, and she had these things that the dress can be worn so many different ways. I just love them. I said, I want more of these.
Yeah,
they were so comfortable.
Every WeSoc?
Pardon?
Every WeSoc since the second one. The first one, they didn't have any vendors.
Mm.
But she's been coming to WeSoc for years and years.
Oh, she was such a delight. I just really enjoyed talking with her, and I love the clothing that I got, and I plan to get a lot more because it's so versatile, you know, and it allows you to be comfortable and be feminine at the same time and kind of harken back to our roots, you know, to bring up the divine feminine from within. It just makes you feel goddessy, you know.
One of the things we do with the vendor fair, first of all, we don't want to get too big. There's never more than about 24, 25 vendors.
Mm-hmm.
But we go through a sort of interview process with them because we don't want it to be just about making the money.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with making money. But in the context of WeSoc, we don't want vendors who are just going to be pushing things on you or hawking at you. We want people who, you know, when the good teachers are on, they'll close their booths and run over to hear the teachers. You know, they're there for the event.
Sure.
So that the whole event is a piece. It's not about, them participating. It isn't, you know, this bit's there and that bit's here. It's one unified thing, even down to our vendors.
Oh, yeah, it was really interesting talking with them. I bought some CDs from people and bought some jewelry and I went over and checked out all the metaforms that Greg had and of course, went over to Dr. Shaw's booth and got books and things like that. And I thought it was a really nice mix between the people who had foundation work that they were doing and the musicians and the artists and the people that were doing quantum physics stuff, which, of course, is one of my loves, so I'm always attracted to that quickly. But it was just really fun. I think you did a great job, you know, just putting all this together. It was such a nice blend.
It really did work. I mean, I can't take that much credit for it, except that we were there and saying, okay, you sign here. And Spirit called all those people here because, you know, they knew Joshua was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew it wasn't going to be, you know, 2,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
But they came anyway.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And they did well. And I had one of my vendors tell me that she did better this year than any other year.
Wow.
Which, you know, given the fact that we didn't have nearly 1,200 people, I was really surprised, but good for her.
Yeah.
Spirit supports you.
Yeah, definitely, and I felt the heart of so many people there was, I mean, I'm attracted to heart energy and always have been, so for me, you know, when I find another kid that's got an open heart, I'm like, woohoo, let's go play. So I was having great fun just talking with these people and just sharing, you know, life stories and what we're all about, and I was really impressed with the magnitude of people who are realizing that times are indeed changing and we need to all step up to the plate now.
Yeah.
That was interesting. And it wasn't doom and gloom.
No.
You know, it was all like, hey, it's time for everybody to wake up right now.
That was the focus of the event, was affecting social consciousness by choosing to evolve.
Yeah. Well, I think it definitely did that. You know, I was listening to some of the people as we were going back and forth, and between talking with the participants and the vendors and the speakers and everything, it was different than any of the other spiritual festivals I've been to. Although this is my first Wesak. You know,
really?
I usually was in Sedona
time?
For this stuff.
Well, I'm glad you had a good experience at your first Wesak.
Oh yeah, it was fun. I can't wait to come back. And I hope, listeners, that if you get a chance to go to Wesak next year, I hope that you do indeed go.
Oh, please go.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you.
Pardon?
I'd love to have them all.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, bring your open hearts.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And let's see what we can plan to do together.
Come a little early and visit the mountain, too.
Oh, yeah. I wish I had come a couple days early.
Come early or stay later and just have some time in the mountain. Let's see. It'll be May 4th through 6th next year. So it may still
the snow will probably be more melted.
Yeah, it's not going to be too bad. It may still be a little chilly at night. You'll still be able to go out. I would come after.
Yeah.
Plan to stay after to give yourself that hedge.
Oh, yeah, when you kind of need to stay after because it's intense. Even though it was fun,
mm-hmm.
it was still intense. And any time you go to a weekend
right.
seminar and you're there all day and half the night, yeah, you get tired.
You do, and you also need to integrate, and you need mm-hmm. to give yourself a little buffer time before you jump back into your 9-to-5.
Oh yeah.
At least I do when I have intense experiences like that.
Because the energy is going to run through and it's going to make changes.
Well, it is designed specifically to be an intensive. It is not designed to be just a casual conference, which you can choose what teacher you want to see and walk out.
Mm-hmm.
You're in one place. The teachers come and go, and the information comes at you from 9 o'clock in the morning. You know, and except for lunch and dinner, it keeps coming at you till 11 o'clock in the evening.
Oh, yeah.
And
it did. I'll tell you what, I was so tired when I got back.
Mm-hmm.
People were really worried about me because I was just absolutely exhausted.
And it's designed that way because when we're tired, our veils are down,
mm-hmm.
much more so than normally. And you don't have to have drugs and you don't have to have anything else to assist you with that. Just keep pushing your body enough, and it'll get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're able to absorb on the subconscious level a lot of the information that's being given. You know, you're only here once a year.
Yeah.
And who knows when you're going to hear these teachers again. And that's why I am so glad that I'm an 8. I'm very protective of
mm-hmm.
what energy gets to be given
mm-hmm.
from that stage.
Well, I think that's very important.
And nobody gets past me.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. That's kind of like in my office. You know, nobody gets past my assistant.
Mm.
You know, she's like the wall.
Well, you need that. And when you're dealing with people who are coming to be open and vulnerable and to receive higher energies, I think you need to be very careful with
yeah.
what type of energies you're offering these people.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. So many people were so wide open there, and they didn't know how to close themselves back up to go out into the rest of the world.
Yeah, and that's why the extra days afterwards are necessary in a way, because the mountain can help do that.
Oh, yeah, well, not only that, but, my gosh, the water. Ah,
the
that
water
is the most delicious
amazing,
water.
Isn't it? It's one of the only places in the country that I know of where we don't have to treat our drinking water. What you get from your faucet comes right out of the ground.
Oh, and I went right to the headwaters
mm-hmm.
and got water right as it sprang out of the mountain.
And it's amazing. You can drink it right from the creek.
Yeah,
and again,
just,
how many places around the country will you do that?
Well, you know, I took some photos while I was there, just little quick photos.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking for something. There's a man here. His name is Ha'a. And he has a special relationship with the water spirits. And he has a CD called Sacred Waters that is about 20 minutes of these photographs that he's taken. You would not believe the faces that are in this water.
Huh.
I mean, it's just amazing. So I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to try that. And so I took a few shots. You know, I just talked to the spirit of the water, took a few shots, and I actually did get some faces. And there is the most beautiful feminine face right where the water comes out of the mountain. I was so amazed. I had no idea she was there.
There's a huge Deva who hangs out over there.
Yeah, well, I would believe
not
it.
Not to mention a bunch of fairy sprites and things like that.
Oh, yeah, there were plenty of those, too. But that one, I mean, she's so incredibly beautiful, and she's right there. And I told my friend, I said, just go over there, would you, and get me water directly out of the mountain. I don't want to scoop it out, you know, 10 feet away. No, I want it right out of the mountain. And that was such incredible healing water and just so wonderful.
Well, not only that, right under where that water comes out, is, I don't know if you noticed, there's a lot of green things that grow. That's all watercress. People pick that for their salads, and they take that healing energy in through the herb as well.
Yeah, I did notice that, actually. And my friend and I were standing there going, is that watercress?
Mm-hmm.
Looks like watercress. So, yeah, it was just really special. So people, you've got to go to the headwaters of the Sacramento River.
Absolutely.
When you go to Shasta. I mean, it's the most delicious water. It's the way water used to taste before we started mucking it up.
Right.
And we used to have similar tasting water in the San Francisco Bay Area. And I don't know what it is now, but, I mean, I was shocked when I moved to Nevada and realized you couldn't drink the water out of the tap. I mean, you can't even sneak up on that water. I was used to taking water out of the tap my whole life. I was kind of in shock. So, water's very, very important. And then, too, there was the Stewart Hot Springs.
Stewart Mineral Springs, yeah.
Oh, man, that was fun.
That is an amazing place. You know, that whole place was reworked a few years ago because of the flood. It just rerouted the river and went right through the place.
Wow.
It had been there all along, but now it's coming in a different flow, and it changed the silica content of the water, and it changed the mineral content of the water, but it's still a very powerful healing water.
Oh, yeah, it was really interesting just laying there in the bathtub and smelling the slight sulfur to it,
mm-hmm.
and feeling the silica. I've never been in a mineral spa that was that slick.
Yeah.
And so that was interesting. But the best part, listeners, is it's clothing optional. So
inside there only, because in Siskiyou County, there is a public nudity law.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be very careful where you go.
Oh, yeah. But at least you can jump in the river there.
Yes, you can jump in the ice-cold river if you have a mind to. I'm from New Orleans. I don't do that.
Oh, I did that.
I was Gulf of Mexico where the water's 90-some degrees, you know.
No, oh, no, I wanted the cold because I try to get as hot as I can and then go jump in the cold because it's really good for you. It's very, very
healthy.
Well,
a lot of people do that. They do the sauna. And then they go soak in the individual tubs. I love the look of that place. It's like an old Western bathhouse, you know.
Yeah.
Individual tubs. So the water is not heated naturally, by the way. They have to heat the water. It comes out of the ground cold. But
interesting.
It is heated with, I think, wood heater, wood somehow. And anyway, people go from the sauna to the hot tub, and then they rush out across the rocks and jump in that ice cold water.
Yep, I did that. Well, I didn't jump. I was taking my time.
In the river, in the natural river, not in a pool. It's the actual.
Oh yeah, it's the
river.
Real river. Yeah, and it was funny because I kind of got the tour of the place, whereas my friend had been there before many times, and so he just went out there and he jumped right into the middle of the river, and the shock of the cold was so much that he kind of like went out of body for a few seconds and found himself, you know, kind of against the dam and almost went over. And he got out and he's laughing his butt off. And then he tells me about it. And I said, oh, my gosh, you know, you would have gotten bruised. And he said, well, they told me somebody did that last week. Went right over the edge.
Wow.
Well, I mean, it's not a huge edge, but, you know,
but
it was so cold.
Yeah.
And, oh, man, it just was wonderful.
Well, then they also, after all of this, they tend to do the Native American sweat lodges out there.
Yeah, they were doing one when we were there.
Jack Tom does it. Jack Tom is Charlie Tom's nephew. Charlie Tom does the sweat lodge on the mountain. He's the only one allowed to on Panther Meadow.
Oh, wow.
Once a year, in the third weekend of August, it's an international event. Hundreds and hundreds of people come for it.
Wow.
But at Stewart, they have his nephew and his nephew's wife who do sweat lodges and moon lodges on the weekends. Depending on how big the group is, of course.
Yeah, they were there when we were there that weekend, and we walked by, and my friend said, are they doing a sweat? I said, yeah, I think they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if we'd known that, we would have participated in that, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's listeners, all I can tell you is it's a lot of fun. It's incredible spiritual advancement, and, you know, it's really nice to get away from the mundane world and kind of go and reconnect powerfully and to realize you're not alone. There are thousands of people like you.
Yeah.
And that's one place where they meet. So it was a lot of fun. And I honor you, Dawn, for putting that together.
I'm sorry?
I honor you for putting that together.
Oh, I couldn't not do it.
Hmm.
It just came so much, it was so obvious that it was for me to do that it just flowed.
Yeah, well, you did a great job.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope to see you next year with a few hundred more people.
Well, I shall be there, and hopefully the listeners will have gleaned enough information from this week and last week that they can make a decision about whether they want to travel there, and I really hope they do.
I do, too.
So thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. And listeners, Dawn's website on the WESAC is wesac.us.
Mm-hmm.
That's WESAC.US. And there's a list of the speakers on there and a little bit about WESAC and about Joshua. And, you know, I really hope that you kind of click into this. And I can tell you that from my background with the Ageless Wisdom teachings, WESAC is the high holy day of the year. And it's an important time to connect with all of the light beings and you know, a better connection to Source. So, again, Dawn, thank you so much. And
thank you.
I think next year what we'll have to do is get you on the show, you know, maybe a month before WESAC and probably tell people about everything that we talked about again.
Okay.
So thanks again. I appreciate it. And listeners, thank you for tuning in. This is Dr. Valerie Olmsted on the Enlightened Medicine Show, and our guest today has been Dawn Fazende. Did I say your name right?
Fazend.
Dawn Fazend of Mount Shasta Magazine and the organizer of the WESAC 2006 celebration. So, tune in next week, and in the meantime, be happy, be healthy, and blessings to you. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.